Hi, welcome to the Sleep With Me podcast, the podcast that puts you to sleep. I'm Dearest Scooter, and I'm going to help you go to sleep tonight. If you spend most nights tossing and turning, mind racing, you're in the right spot. I'm going to talk about a subject that's just engaging enough that you'll be able to put your thoughts aside, but it's going to be just boring enough for you to slowly slip off into deep sleep. Put your phone aside. Close your eyes. Snuggle in. Pull up your covers. And fall asleep with me. Tonight we have another segment of The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead, but just the boring parts. The parts they don't put on screen. The parts you don't read about on blogs. Parts you don't wait all week to hear about, because they're incredibly dull, but I'm going to cover them here tonight and help you drift off into dreamland. So tonight we're going to cover episode 4, The Walking Dead.
Indifference. I think if Carol was naming the episode, she'd probably have named it Enter a New Dawn. And if we were naming the episode for Rick, you don't have to like it, just accept it. Nah. But we're not going to talk about all the interesting stuff that happened, because that's not boring. It was a good episode. Tonight we're going to cover some of the best places to get drunk during the zombie apocalypse. We're going to have a visit from our buddy Wendy Marshstrap. We're going to cover seatbelts, pancakes, and men's room keys. So tonight's The Walking Dead. Indifference to the new dawn we can't accept, or something like that. So, we're going to talk about Bob first. A lot was revealed about him in this episode. And what they didn't tell you guys is that, yeah, he was in two other groups before that died. And he was the last person to die. He wasn't the last person to die, he survived. And in each group, he had a nickname, and it was called What About Bob, because he had fallen in with like-minded people, like we all do, that like to drink. And Bob was always the last person to leave the bar or the hole they were holed up in. And they'd all be stumbling out, and they'd be like halfway down the street, and they'd be like, What About Bob? And two of those times, his group got attacked, and it was good he was What About Bob, because he wasn't there. And we're going to take a step back to the second group. According to my sources, you know, Bob had met up with one guy for a little while after his second group died. He was telling him, you know, that he liked to hit the bottle. And the guy was like, you know, Bob, doesn't really seem like that great an idea to get drunk during the zombie apocalypse. I mean, I get it. But, you know, And I wouldn't mind, you know, tying one on. But where can we get drunk that's safe, you know? It just feels like, you know, like I always wonder, the president, he can't get drunk, can he? I mean, what if he's drunk and something happens? And Bob goes, okay. Let me tell you some good places to get drunk. First off, rooftops. And he's like, back in high school, I used to get drunk on rooftops all the time and just watch the traffic go by. As long as you're in a city, in my experience, you can hop to one or two rooftops and usually get an escape route if you get overrun by zombies. Another great place, usually a lot of rookies like you will think trees. Trees aren't a good place, but if you can find in a nice rich neighborhood a treehouse with a zip line, you know, that gives you an escape route, that's pretty good. If your treehouse gets surrounded, boom, you zip out of there, you're fine. Because another place people don't think to drink, and it's a little dangerous, cliffs. It's like you get halfway down a cliff over a body of water, and you could just booze there all day. Zombies come, they're going to fall right by you. Something really bad happens. As long as the water is somewhat safe, jump in. You swim away from the zombie horde. Another good place I've hit the bottle a few times is a canoe. Just get out there in the middle of the lake. Make sure you have more than one option to shore the canoe. Go ahead and get after it. Just don't drown. And then Bob got all quiet, and he was kind of like, "But let me tell you, this whole zombie apocalypse has really made me think about my drinking and how I could really make it work. And I've got a dream I'm going to share with you. It's probably a dream that other people share, but my dream is to be alone and find a nuclear sub. And sure, it'll be hard to figure out how to run it by myself. But just think about it. Be the perfect place. Get it stocked up. Set out to sea and go underwater. You know, it almost makes me want to sing." And then Bob's eyes kind of glaze over. He gets dreamy looking. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. "Son, the liquor is always sweeter when you don't have to watch your back. My dream's to be underwater, far away from zombie attack. I'd have my own submarine, dude, parked right on the ocean floor. So wasted, I'm not having a clue, no. What more could a drunk ask for? Under the sea, under the sea. Boozing is better down where it's wetter, take it from me. Up on the land you worry all day. No time to drink the pain away. But submarine cruising, full-timey boozing under the sea." Da 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 da. Bob's dancing around and he realized some zombies had already come in and eaten his buddy. And so he took off. And I'll tell you what, if you want to hear the rest of that song, go ahead and review me on iTunes. I don't care what review you give me. It would be nice to have a good review. And go ahead and email me a screenshot just proving you have the review. You can scrub out everything. Email me at drscooter@sleepwithmepodcast.com. And I will give you the entire Under the Sea version just for giving us a review on iTunes. Thank you.
Hi, folks. I'm Wendy Marshstrap. And I'm going to be hijacking a sequence of The Walking Dead every once in a while to talk about me, Wendy Marshstrap, and Dewey, my pet Dewback. You might remember me from Star Wars. I was good friends with Luke growing up. But as an adult, I've had plenty of adventures on my own. And I'm going to talk about them every week. Now, tonight I just want to talk about Mos Eisley. I know some Jedi like to call it a hive of scum and villainy, but there's lots to like here. You like diversity? Well, we've got it. We've got people from all over the universe. We're one of the most diverse places anywhere. If you always wanted to meet a Furby or an Oompa Loompa, well, this is the place. And there's more people moving here every day. Do you like gambling? We've got palaces of gambling. Plenty of places for you to wager your money. Games of chance. Just like the town you call Prague, we've got an old town and a new town, where you can see old stuff and you can see new stuff. You know what else we have? Bribery. Do you like to bend the rules or do you like to break them? Because if you do and you get caught, you can get out of it here in Mos Eisley. Do you like spice? We got plenty of spice. Are you a weapons collector or in need of a weapon? We've got plenty of weapons. If you always wished you could have a blaster that shoots in pink, or green, or magenta, or whatever your favorite color is, we got one for you. Are you not a Jedi, but you wish you could get a lightsaber? Or one for your kids? We've got them in all sizes, folks. Do you like the environment? Well, here in Mos Eisley, we recycle both the gray water and our brown. The gray water is when you wash your hands and dishes. The brown and yellow water, well, you know what that is. But we recycle it all. We purify it, we distill it, and then we get to reuse it. Yay. You've heard of the Dowager Queen, right? It crashed here with our first residents. You can come see the wreckage of the Dowager Queen, along with a museum and a gift shop. You can even take something home with you. Do you like art? Well, due to some deal with the Empire or because because he had a crush on a woman, our own Jabba the Hutt opened up his own art collection in a new museum where you can see art he's plundered from all over the world. Well, those are just a few of the things that are great about Mos Eisley. And of course you want to stop by the cantina for a drink, but don't bring your droids. All right, folks, this is Dewey, my dewback, and me, Wendy Marshtrap, signing off. See you soon.
Next up tonight, seatbelts. And some just boring, random Wikipedia facts about seatbelts. They're invented by an English engineer, George Cayley, in the early 19th century. But in typical United States style, Edward Claghorn of New York got the first patent. And this is a perfect example of what's not good about Wikipedia. The next paragraph here says, In 1903, French inventor Gustave Désiré Lavie invented a special kind of seatbelt. That's it. That's the entire paragraph. No citation, nothing. Special kind of seatbelt. On to the show here. 1946, Dr. C. Hunter Selton. He is a neurologist in California, Pasadena. And, you know, he started noticing that getting a car accident's not so good for your brain. And he came up with the idea of these retractable seatbelts, similar to what we have today. And he's credited with, you know, this reduction in head injuries by proposing the retractable seatbelt. He also, you know, suggested other stuff, but they're like, we'll just do those seatbelts. In 1949, car manufacturer in America, Nash, had seatbelt as options. But Saab, from Sweden, put them standard in 1958. And then we saw more and more commonplace seatbelts. Now, since it's Christmas season, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, let's talk about possibly someone's dad. Because the first three-point seatbelt was called the CIR Griswold Restraint by Roger Griswold and Hugh DeHaven. And then Niles Bolin, Volvo, he put it on standard on Volvos in 1959. It was shown to be very effective. Now, there's always debates about these things. Are seatbelts, do they save lives? Do they? I'm not going down the controversy road. I just sang under the sea a couple things that go. But seatbelt laws in the United States were adopted after 1970. Victoria, Australia did the first seatbelt law. And, you know, everybody kind of got their whatever, underwear in a bunch or whatever you say. But one thing I tried when I was reading about it, I was like, it used to be a buzzer on cars, they said, in the 70s and 80s, and I can't for the life of me remember what that buzzer sounded like. I know you're trying to fall asleep, so I'm not going to be bugging you with a buzzer. After people started axe murdering people because of the buzzer, they put in that chime. You do get the sense, you know, the car companies could really give a rat's about us. A little bit about the legislation, though. Observational studies of car crash morbidity and mortality. The experiments using both crash test dummies and human cadavers. Oh, that makes me laugh. Thinking about human cadavers crashing on a Walking Dead episode. But, you know, they try to say that they don't. In one trial, you know, they try to argue, seatbelts make you drive more dangerously. And they said that, you know, people were asked to drive around the go-kart in various conditions. Subjects that drove unbelted, and then when they got belted, they were driving faster. A 2001 analysis of U.S. crash data aimed to establish the effects of seatbelt legislation on driving fatalities, and they found they decreased fatalities by 1.35% for each 10% increase in seatbelt use. So it works. One other thing. Other statistical analysis has included, you know, I'm just going to cut it off there. Next up is pancakes. It's ironic that, you know, Rick threw a dead Lori under the bus for not making good pancakes. That was a sweet moment, and I really, not to get into, I thought the acting was great between Rick and Lori, or Andrew Lincoln and Martina McBride, I believe. I'm sorry, I don't, anyway, I thought the acting was great. But ironically, I found this great pancake recipe this weekend before the episode aired, because me and my daughter always have pancakes on Saturdays, and I've been looking for them. This one's by Martha Stewart and appeared in Everyday Food in September 2006. I had it this weekend, and no joke, it's awesome. It's fluffy pancakes, and all you need is one cup of flour, all-pro, all-purp, 2 tablespoons sugar, 2 teaspoons baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon salt, cup of milk, 2 tablespoons unsalted butter, melted or vegetable oil, 1 large egg, a tablespoon of vegetable oil, and toppings. We didn't have toppings, but if you want to keep them warm, you put your oven up to 200 degrees, and let's see, you in a small bowl, whisk together flour, sugar, baking soda, and salt, and set aside. And then in a medium bowl, put together the milk, butter, and egg. And then add the dry ingredients to milk mixture. I actually did it in reverse just because of my bowl situation. Whisk until moistened, but do not moisten. Do not overmix. Make sure a few small lumps are fine, according to Martha. And then you heat up a large skillet. I mean, everybody should at this point know how to cook pancakes once they're mixed, but medium. I'm not good at judging. I was probably kicking it at medium high. Oil up the pan with oil. She suggests folding a sheet of paper towel in half, moistening with oil, and rubbing the skillet. I just sprayed some olive oil on there. Again, I'm working on my sibilance, so I apologize for those whistly S's because I know you're trying to sleep. Now, hopefully, you're dreaming of pancakes. And then you take 2 to 3 tablespoons of batter onto the skillet. She says to use the back of the spoon to spread the batter into a round. Mine kind of just did it. Fit 2 or 3 in a large skillet. Now, this is good advice because I'm always like, when do you flip these things? And I'm always messing up. She says, cook until the surface of pancakes have some bubbles and a few have burst, about 1 to 2 minutes. Flip them, cook them brown on the underside, 1 to 2 minutes more. Transfer them to a baking sheet and put them in the oven, loosely covered in oil if you want to keep them warm. Or you can just eat them. So that's pancakes. And finally tonight, to really bore you, I was thinking about that men's room key that Bob planted in someone's eye. And then I started thinking about, you know, in my experience, what have I run across, you know, road trips, emergency bathroom runs in New York City or something. It's like, you know, what are things you've seen men's room keys attached to? A big spoon. That's pretty common. One at Burger King in California. Well, wire, like, rack. I think I've seen a knife once or twice, but probably was dull. I don't know if I've ever seen a lanyard, but I wrote lanyard down. Wood blocks. You see a lot of wood blocks or, you know, like, I don't know if that was like a giant baseball pencil he had that he put in that guy's brain or just a giant, you know, dowel-like piece of wood. Maybe, you know, one of those mini baseball bats you get when you're a kid when you whine. I mean, have those been supplanted by bobbleheads at this point? And then I was Googling. I came across this blog. It's defunct, I guess. I mean, it's still up, but they're not updating it, called the Bathroom Key Chronicles. And they had some stuff on there. Metal door handle, kind of like one you'd see on a barn. A red metal shelf sign, like you'd see at Target, like holding up the price. Beat-up big whisk, or they call it an egg beater. Wooden back scratcher, that's nasty. And then metal bookends from a library. And then I was thinking, yeah, ideally, well, I guess you probably need to pick a side. Do you want something wood, or do you want something metal? And, I mean, we'll leave that up for the pathologists, or, well, pathologists test blood, so someone smarter than me, basically. You know, which, I mean, it would, you know, kind of, you know, people don't wash their hands. So it's like wet metal's kind of gross, but wet wood's, you know, stuff could be living in there. So I don't know. I mean, I was hoping to have a longer list and, you know, bore you. I'm just looking around the room I'm in. You could have a men's belt, I guess. A shoe would kind of be nasty. Well, you should go to sleep, okay? If the pancakes didn't get you, let's be honest. I mean, I know you might be stressed, and that's why I made this podcast for you. You can't sleep. I've had insomnia, so I know how bad it is. But look at it this way. Whatever's going on with you, you're not failing to be boring. Like right now, if you're still listening, almost like failing at failing. Like I'm failing to bore you. And even though, even by trying to be a downer about my failure to bore you, I'm not boring you either. So I'm like, I guess I'm trying to bore you with my neurotic tendencies. I don't know. But, you know, things aren't that bad, okay? Serious. I've been there, man. I'm just riffing now. I didn't have any of this down. But I, fifth grade, I could not sleep because of this teacher was so mean to me. And I couldn't fall asleep at all any school night. No one bought it. And maybe this will help you fall asleep. This worked once or twice for me. My father, you know, my parents, I'm like, oh, you know, I really have something. You know, you just don't want to go to school. But then my dad said, oh, you know, I've been telling people at work that you can't sleep. He said, one lady said, what I like to do is pretend I'm at the giant, top of this giant staircase, a grand, long staircase. And I'm in this gown. And I'm just the staircase is almost endless. And I'm descending in this flowing gown. Down deeper and deeper down on the staircase, and the gown's just flowing around me.